In 64 AD, Rome burned. The fire began in the slums of Rome, and it spread from there. It raged through the city for nearly 3 solid days. 3 of Rome's 14 districts were completely wiped out. Only 4 of them remained untouched by the fire. Hundreds of people died, and thousands of people were left homeless. The emperor at the time was an emperor named Nero, and he used that fire to clamp down on the growing influence of Christians in Rome. He blamed them for burning the city. He didn't have any proof or anything. It was just a convenient way of getting rid of Christians. He arrested them. He tortured them. He executed hundreds of Christians as a result. Meanwhile, all through Judea, small groups of Jews were resisting their Roman overlords. In 66 AD, just a couple years after the fire, the Jews of Judea combined in revolt, successfully kicked out the Romans from Jerusalem, and set up their own revolutionary government. But of course, Rome retaliated. And what followed was a messy, bloody war that lasted for about 4 years. In 70 AD, the war ended when Jerusalem fell once again to Rome. The temple was burned in retaliation, and the Jewish state just collapsed. There is a Jewish historian, his name is Josephus, and he himself was one of the leaders of one of the factions that was battling against Rome during this war. He estimated that that war killed about 1 million Jewish people, and also that thousands of them were sold into slavery because of it. All of that is the backdrop to Mark's gospel. Mark was a second-generation Christian who was mentored by Peter. He wrote from Rome, most likely shortly after Peter was executed. And the people who read his gospel were right in the thick of things. They had survived, likely, the fire and the emperor's retaliation for the fire. They probably weren't in Judea in their home country during the revolt, but they definitely suffered because of it. Now, all of this happened 30 plus years after Jesus, but it all was still there, bubbling under the surface during Jesus' time. The various sects of Jews were divided on how to respond to Rome. There was fighting and bickering between the different Jewish sects, as well as between the Jews and Rome. Some of the sects encouraged capitulation, while others stood in staunch opposition to all things that were Roman. And they all wanted to know where Jesus, this man of rising influence, they all wanted to know where he stood on the matter. The Sadducees were one group, and they were the elite. They were the ones that Rome favored. They defended Herod, Rome's ruling Jewish puppet. They made up the Sanhedrin, which was a group of people who were essentially the Jewish Supreme Court. The chief priests of the day were probably Sadducees. They were all about the centrality of the temple in Jerusalem. Everything revolved around the temple. The Pharisees was another sect, another group, and they were deeply opposed to Rome and to Herod. They were incensed by the Hellenization of their Jewish religion, the influence of Greece and Rome on their Jewish religion. They were largely responsible for maintaining Jewish tradition. Religious purity was of utmost importance to them. All through these groups, corruption was rampant. The prophets of the goods that were sold in Jerusalem largely went straight into the coffers of the elite, of the Roman collaborators and the rulers. The regular people didn't see the prophets, didn't see any wealth from this. The scribes were another group in the Jewish people. They were most likely mostly lawyers and judges. And so when we read passages of scripture like Rosemary just read for us, and then in the version that she read for us, it was a lawyer who went to Jesus and asked. In other versions, it's a scribe who went to Jesus. That's because the scribes were typically the legal minds of the day. They were interpreters of the Jewish law. They didn't make the laws, they interpreted. They were also members of the elite. Their privilege cushioned them from Rome's worst traits and the political corruption that surrounded them. Now, just like the Sadducees, they had a lot invested in maintaining the status quo. Everyone wanted to know who Jesus was, and perhaps more importantly, whether or not he was a threat to their ongoing security and privilege. So they asked him questions and they tested his responses. Earlier from what Rosemary read for us in Mark 12 in verses 13 to 17, we read that there were some Pharisees and some Herodians, which are those who supported Herod, like the Sadducees did. So these two groups came to Jesus and they asked him this: is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor? Now, they weren't asking Jesus if it was legal according to Roman law. They were asking if it was legal according to God's law. For the Pharisees especially, everything was always all about God's law. It was all about rightly interpreting and understanding scripture. But in all honesty, their real question had nothing to do with whether or not it was legal to pay taxes. What they really wanted to know was whether or not Jesus supported Rome. They wanted to know if Jesus could be trusted to maintain the status quo, or whether or not he was a danger to their position and their power. That's really why they were asking the question. A few verses later in Mark 12, 18 to 27, we read that some Sadducees then came to Jesus. Now they came to ask for clarification regarding what Jesus thought about resurrection, and they have a whole convoluted story that leads up to that question. But they, like the Pharisees, they weren't really all that interested in learning from Jesus. They didn't really care what he thought about the particular issue that they raised. What they really wanted to know was whether Jesus was one of them or not. They wanted to know if Jesus was going to be a problem for them or not. And then we get to Mark 12, 28 to 34, which is the passage that Rosemary read for us, which is our passage for today. And in that, we read that a scribe or a lawyer came to Jesus and asked, which commandment is the first of all? Or in other words, which of the commandments is the most important commandment? Now, given the previous two encounters that Jesus had with members of Jerusalem's elite, it would make sense for us to assume that the scribe in today's reading also wasn't really interested in Jesus' answer so much as figuring out where Jesus fit and whether or not he was a threat. In fact, the way that Matthew and Luke tell this story, because the story is also in those Gospels, the scribe was there to test Jesus, just like the Pharisees and Sadducees before him. But as Mark tells the story, it plays out differently than the previous two between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Where in the first two, Jesus masterfully foiled their attempts to trap him and give them an excuse they're looking for to condemn him, Jesus encouraged this scribe. And not only that, but right up front, we're told that the scribe asked his question because he'd overheard Jesus' interaction with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and he was impressed by Jesus. He wasn't looking to trip Jesus up. He genuinely wanted to know and saw in Jesus someone who might be able to give the right answer. So he asked Jesus, which commandment is first of all? Which of the commandments is the most important one? And Jesus didn't beat around any bushes with him. Jesus just spoke to him very directly by quoting scripture. He said this: "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now, I'm guessing that those words are probably familiar to most of us. Love God, love people. It's really the short form of what it means to be a Christian, isn't it? It's the essence of discipleship. Love God and love other people. It's what Jesus modeled in his life and in his death. Every other thing that Jesus did and said can be summarized by these words: love God and love other people. It sounds really simple, doesn't it? It sounds so very, very straightforward. First, love God. Make God the priority in your life. Honor God by obeying his commandments and caring about the things that God cares about. And second, love other people. Love your neighbor. Now, in Luke's gospel, there's a follow-up question to this encounter between the scribe and Jesus. The scribe asked Jesus, when Jesus finishes saying, and the second is this, to love your neighbors yourself, the scribe asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And Jesus answers by telling him the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, you're probably familiar with the story, but I'm going to recap it anyways. He tells the story of this man who fell into the hands of robbers on the road between cities one day. The robbers stripped him, they beat him, they left him for dead in a ditch. And a priest saw the man, passed by on the other side of the road. A Levite, also of the priestly class, saw the man, passed by on the other side of the road. And then a Samaritan saw the man. He treated the man's wounds. He took him to a nearby inn and he took care of him. The next day he paid the innkeeper so the man could stay and be cared for until he was healed enough to move on. And so then at the conclusion of the story, Jesus asked the scribe, which of these men, the priest, the Levite, or the Samaritan, which one of them was a neighbor to the injured man? Answering the question, who is my neighbor? Now, of course, the answer is the Samaritan. The scribe said, the Samaritan. Well, we who don't live in Jesus' day and time sometimes fail to realize is that the scribe to whom Jesus was speaking, to him, the idea that a Samaritan would be upheld as an example against a priest and a Levite was just wrong. Samaritans were half-breeds. They were the antithesis of what it meant to be a good Jew. They were the antithesis of what it meant to be faithful to God. So when Jesus said, love your neighbor, and then set up a Samaritan as the neighbor, what he's saying is, love your enemy. Love the one who doesn't deserve it. Love the one who is outside of God's people. It would have been so much easier if Jesus had just answered the question that was asked up front. Which commandment is the first of all? Love God. Simple, straightforward, so easy. Everyone knew how to love God. Worship him. Read the scriptures. Take your sacrifices to the temple. Obey the commandments. Simple, straightforward, easy in a sense. But then Jesus added that second most important commandment, the one that the scribe didn't even ask for in the first place. And when Jesus answered it, he said that loving God was not enough, at least not if it was defined as everyone understood it to be defined. When Jesus added that second greatest commandment, he wasn't presenting two distinct, compartmentalized, unique commands. They aren't commands that live in isolation with each other. He wasn't saying, okay, love God and then go over here and love people as distinct things. Those two things Jesus was saying by wrapping them together in this was that they can't exist separately. We can't love God without also loving our neighbor. In 1 John 1, the author of that letter uses the image of darkness and light to describe those who love God and those who don't. And it's as evidenced by the way that they live their lives. And this is what we read in 1 John 1. Whoever says, I am in the light, while hating brother or sister, is still in the darkness. Whoever loves a brother or sister lives in the light, and in such a person there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates another believer is in the darkness, walks in the darkness, and does not know the way to go, because the darkness has brought on blindness. Now, obviously, the context of 1 John is different from that of Mark 12, but the meaning, I think, is fundamentally the same. If we do not love other people, be they other believers like 1 John is talking about, or our enemies, or our neighbors, we do not love God. I want to pause here and think about that for a moment. If I don't love other Christians, even other Christians who believe differently than me, if I don't love my neighbors, especially those neighbors who don't fit in, who are less than, who I'm justified in disliking and of whom I disapprove, if I don't love other people, all other people, then I do not love God. These two commandments are presented like they're distinct and can be compartmentalized, but they aren't distinct. They are interdependent. They are intertwined. To love God, I must love my neighbor. Do you remember how love is defined? Jesus exemplified love in the cross in his willing self-sacrifice for others. Paul famously had this to say about love in 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. Love isn't irritable or resentful. Love does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Think about what all that means in the context of Jesus' words. Love is patient. Are we patient with other people, especially people we don't like or with whom we disagree or who just say stupid things? Love is kind. Are we kind to other people, all other people, even the ones who are not kind to us? Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. How do we treat other people? Love doesn't insist on its own way. Are we willing to allow other people to have things their way, especially those other people with whom we vehemently disagree? Love is not irritable or resentful. Am I irritable or resentful? Are you? Love doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Is there a limit to what we're willing to put up with from other people? Jesus said that the greatest commandment is this: Hear, O Lord, the Lord your God, our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Imagine how Jesus' listeners heard these words. And imagine how Mark's readers heard these words. Who were their neighbors? Samaritans, sure, like in the story of the Good Samaritan, but also Romans. Those same people who had destroyed the temple, killed a million, give or take, Jews, enslaved thousands of them. Those are the neighbors that Jesus was telling his listeners they had to love, which makes us ask the question, who are our neighbors? Who is Jesus challenging us to love this morning, this week?